We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, over there, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir! Sir!
Sir!
How you doing?
Ty, I'm doing good. I'm on some new shit. Saying yes. Yeah. Instead of no, I thought I saw you at the bus stop. I didn't.
You've been listening to Folklore, haven't you?
I'm into it.
The new T-Swift dropped, what, 2 weeks ago before our podcast? Or we found out about it before our podcast?
Something like that. Yeah. No, it's good. It's good. It's different. It's good walking music, Ty.
Walking,
if you gotta
music,
go for a walk. I push the solid toddler. We'll go for a walk. We'll go over to a park or something like that. And maybe while he's, you know, running around flirting with the ladies,
sure,
going on some swings, maybe I'll pop in a song or two. Give me a soundtrack. Usually I like the Nat sound, as they say, It's good walking music. Sometimes it's just maybe after he goes down for the night, I'll go for a walk in the neighborhood. I'll just throw on some T-Swift. Sometimes a podcast, sometimes Folklore.
Supreme washed list activity.
Oh, Ty, I'm advanced. I've been practicing.
Go on that nice long walk after dinner. Welcome back to the show. We have broken the seal on August as we get a little bit closer to whatever this season is going to look like. We do have some news on that front that we're going to get through. Also of note, we put out the call earlier that we wanted to take your questions. Again, it's August. We generally do one or two of these shows, these Q&A type shows per month. And now that we are getting seemingly closer to a season, it's time for us to do previews, Mr. Rubenstein.
Yeah, we are approaching, I was going to say that time, but it's not an annual time that we do this. So yeah, it appears that it's time for us to do so. I'm very excited to dive in. The Big 12 is where we're starting, and the Big 12, as we're recording this later in the week, we're recording this early on, they're going to announce more schedule specifics. So we'll be armed with more data to talk about what Brock Purdy has in front of him, or what Sam Ehlinger has in front of him, or Keontae Ingram is running into, stuff like that. So I'm excited.
I am too. It feels good to actually go in and do a deep dive on some of these teams. So I'm excited. That'll be on Friday. That show drops. We're going to start previews, and each of the next, what, four or five shows after that will also be previews as we build towards, again, whatever format this season takes on, we will be with you cheering loudly, hoping that it stays safe and that it's fun.
Your voice is going up.
Got to raise the register here, Dan. It's been a long off season and still an uncertain one at that.
Yeah, and I'm excited because obviously timing is pretty variable. We are going to have opportunities as we increase the rate with which we record to maybe update some previews. A quarterback wins a job, somebody gets hurt, a coach gets fired, another schedule adjustment happens. So we're leaving ourselves some wiggle room given the revised scheduling as it stands August 3rd. Today's the 3rd we're
Today
recording
this? Today is the 3rd. This is going to drop on the 5th. So they could call the whole damn thing off by the time the show drops.
Yeah, and I think it's actually good that we make that clear because a lot of news drops every hour right now, be it with players uniting and taking stands and asking a conference for adjustments to how student athletes, quote unquote, are treated, or with how schedules are revised, or anything. Coaches making
Don't
phone calls that they
the
shouldn't
thunder
be.
Here. Come on. You know the drill.
It's just clear that we're recording this Monday, August 3rd. That's all.
Also, going out to solidverbal.com/store and buy the new shirt, the Tecmo Solid Verbal, I believe is what you called it.
Yeah, it's the welcome screen to Tecmo Super Bowl, the greatest video game ever made.
Right.
Man, maybe one of the NCAAs was better. There was a version of NCAA that licensed a bunch of music. I want to say like NCAA 09, 08, somewhere in there, 07. Like De La Soul was on there, I want to say. Maybe the Foo Fighters, all sorts of like, crazy
bands. That's right.
That was a fun version of NCAA. So other than that, I am very partial to a lot of my childhood in Tecmo Super Bowl. And so we dedicated the theme of the shirt to that. So it's that sort of welcome screen in space for some reason. And very soft, available via our friends at Cotton Bureau.
Mama H, by the way, when I was on my way to a golf round on Saturday morning, wanted to buy one and pointed out that they're available not just in tank tops, but also in sweatshirts.
You can get a crew neck sweatshirt, you can get tanks, there's kid sizes, they're
awesome.
Women's cuts, there's all sorts of options. If you want cotton, they got you there as well. We've talked about this before, I'm tri-blend only, so
tri-blend,
they've got me.
All right. And the only other thing that I'll point out, and I won't give too much of the game away here, but we are planning some exciting events here. I would say over the next few weeks that we're still working on in the lab. But if you haven't already, just go on out to solidverbal.com and sign up for our newsletter. You can also follow along on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, going out to the subreddit, solidverbal.reddit.com. All those hotspots can help you stay up to date with what we got going on. But we got some cool stuff planned and I'm excited. I'll just leave it at that for now. More to come.
Especially if you live in Christchurch, New Zealand, especially.
Shall we get to that news?
Can you actually play a breaking news question real quick?
Or sure.
Sound bite real quick?
Breaking news!
An Instagram user asked us, Cajun truffle oil or regular tots/fries, which is the best? That comes to us from QV Huno. That has come in, Ty. I should be a little bit alarmed that we're almost at like 50-50. Hey, what five running backs are you most looking forward to watching? And hey, what would you call chicken wings that are named after you guys type questions? My answer is basically anytime I see a Cajun seasoning option, I roll with it and it rarely steers me in the wrong direction.
Oh, man. All right. Let's get to the actual news here. So you mentioned this at the top, but some news towards the latter half of the week last week and then materialized a little bit more over the weekend. Pac-12 football players are showing unity. They are listing demands in a letter to the conference. The group from multiple schools, they penned a letter. It showed up in the Players Tribune threatening to opt out of fall camp and game participation unless their demands for fair treatment, safety regulations, and concerns over racial justice for college athletes are met by the conference. The letter is signed by players of the Pac-12. It uses the hashtag #WeAreUnited to explain their concerns, saying, quote, because NCAA exploits college athletes physically, economically, academically, and also disproportionately harms Black college athletes. #WeAreUnited. This garnered a lot of attention over the last few days. Very interested to see where this all goes. to what end the Pac-12 and member schools are able to meet some of these demands. I will say that they waited for the right time to, you know, cash in their bargaining chip, because right now, with things as uncertain as they are in and around the world of college football, if you've got a workforce, quote unquote workforce, that just decides, ah, we're good, that would really put things in a bind. So I admire the timing of this for sure.
Oh, absolutely. No, the organization, the timing, the messaging in large part. And one of the things I think gets overlooked a little bit, this is a negotiation. The grander group of college athletes as a whole don't have representation. So they've banded together in the way that I guess Pac-12 football players can. And that, I think it started on GroupMe. It started with some Cal football players and branched out from there. A lot of pretty well-known Pac-12 players were on board with this and shared the messaging yesterday on social media. So it certainly garnered a lot of attention. But yeah, between the health stuff, which all made sense, all of the concerns about safety protocols and health insurance after playing, nothing really all that unreasonable, just a tricky situation, perhaps with some of the revenue asks. I think there was an ask for about 50% of revenue to be distributed to players and dipping into endowments, which is more complicated since endowments are earmarked for specific things by the people giving the money to save. And we saw Stanford cancel a number of Olympic sports. The social justice, the racial justice stuff, all was, it just seemed like a no-brainer. Let's listen to people more. Let's create scholarships for low-income people more. Let's have a more open conversation, more due process. All of these things from a human level all seem like very reasonable, thoughtful asks. One of the, I wouldn't say problems, is just the revenue thing is tough because college football is built on not handling revenue all that responsibly as it relates to other similar professionalized sports. And so that's the understanding I have, is it's the beginning of a negotiation. How can we help to distribute revenue with those who help to generate it? And I think that is a reasonable conversation, a reasonable ask. And the hope is that things evolve from a human perspective. It's you see a lot of people, and this is the straw man argument, come out, whether they're in the media, whether they're fans in general. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad faith place. I think people like the sport for different reasons, and they see, say, scholarships and room and board as, well, I didn't get that. They should be lucky that they get that. I don't know if I want to open the can of worms thing about what college football players do and don't have, but it's clear this season is largely happening for revenue purposes. And
not even a question
that football helps to generate and helps to garner. So if that's the case, these players have even more leverage than usual. And we saw, I think it was a top Washington corner, Elijah Molden. He shared something I thought it was very thoughtful. And then Trevor Lawrence, who might be the highest profile college football player on the planet right now, he shared what Elijah Molden had to say. So it seems like you're never going to really get change without a ton of buy-in from big names with big platforms. Right. And that's what we're seeing more and more. So I found it to be fascinating. I really hope for their sake, because, and this is, I think I can speak for you, but I can definitely speak for myself. My favorite thing about college football is watching college football players play college football. So anything that is college football player forward, I'm in favor of. That's my favorite. It's my literal favorite part, with grilled Mexican food coming shortly thereafter.
Yeah, and truly, it is the next frontier.
Yeah,
in college football, the players finding their collective voice about this or something else. We saw it with the NIL legislation, which at some point we'll dive a little bit more into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the next frontier.
Where do you see this going realistically? And is it something that you could see getting worked out or having a beta agreement before fall camp?
I think it's the beta agreement. One of their specific asks was for some sort of task force to help with some of the racial injustice topics that were voiced in this letter. That strikes me as a quick win, something that can be organized very quickly and can have great effect. There are other things here that are more systemic, right? Like the whole financial model here is a big deal, right?
Yeah.
That's a system upon which the entire sport is built. It's going to take a while to work through the details on that front, but I think if we can get some sort of buy-in from member institutions that they're going to work with this group of players, that's where I would expect this to go next.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then there are a number of smart people you can follow on this on social media. I saw Michael Felder, who's terrific. I think he's, I don't know if he's Michael Felder in the bleachers on Twitter, but I've, you know, we've been following him forever. He played defensive back at North Carolina and mentioned the facilities thing. Why do exorbitant and beautiful facilities exist? Well, it's sort of a recruiting arms race. It's to keep players in the facility, watching film, being around other players, buying in, and not necessarily becoming full college students. And it's even more recruiting. It's even more recruiting. And so one of the things that the players in the Pac-12 United statement made was, we're spending so much money on everything but the people on the field. And so that's the interesting thing to me, is how this changes the bottom line and the spreadsheets across the sport. Because what a Texas spreadsheet, what an Ohio State spreadsheet looks like, is not what a Mount Union spreadsheet looks like, is not what a Texas track and field spreadsheet looks like. So it's fascinating to see if this gets, at least there's an incremental change that happens in the next month or so before the season starts.
All right. So to pivot off of that, Washington State head football coach Nick Rolovich tells wide receiver Cassidy Woods that joining the Unity Group, the one we just discussed, would create, quote, an issue. Now, Cassidy Woods called to inform Nick Rolovich that he was going to opt out of the season. He's got sickle cell trait.
Mm-hmm.
He would be at an enhanced risk, obviously, for the coronavirus. No big deal on that front, right? Rolovich told Woods, no big deal.
Right.
No problem there. What he would have a problem with is if he opted to be part of the Unity movement, the group that we just discussed, the ones that are threatening to opt out this season, if the Pac-12 does not meet a series of demands, quote, that's going to be an issue if you align with them as far as future stuff, Rolovich said, according to the Dallas Morning News. Quote, the COVID stuff is one thing, but joining this group, it's going to be different. If you say I'm opting out because of COVID and health and safety, I'm good. But this group is going to change how things go in the future for everybody, at least at our school, end quote. That's a really bad look there. Perhaps there is more context that will come out that will make it look better. But
call was
on
recorded,
its face,
Ty.
On its face.
Yeah.
I'm trying to give folks the benefit of the doubt, but it's hard. On its face, that is certainly not a good look for the new head football coach at Washington State, Mr. Rolovich.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at this from all perspectives, but the call was recorded. There is a transcript to the call. It's not a terrific look for Nick Rolovich, especially since he hasn't coached a single game or a full spring practice session or full fall camp. He is brand new. And the most important thing, if you asked any coach about what is the most important thing when you become a new coach, it's generally you got to win over the locker room and get buy-in. You got to get everybody believing in you, believing in your vision, believing in you as a human and how you are going to day to day take this program from A to B. And it's rough.
It is absolutely rough to start your tenure.
No, and not in Nick Rolovich's defense, but I can see that Nick Rolovich is saying, okay, I need buy-in. If somebody's opting out, I don't want them at practices. I don't want them in the locker room. If they're opting out for health reasons, it's for the best that they're not there, perhaps distracting or just sort of on the sidelines.
By the way, Nicole Auerbach, our friend, shortly after some of this news broke on Twitter, that no, this is because of him opting out. He has to leave. He can't practice. That's part of the rules. And more came out after that. The transcript, the recording of the call, et cetera. And that sort of puts us where we're at right now.
It seems like when we hear about coaches sort of making fools of themselves, or the optics are that a coach has made a fool of himself, it seems like he is not there for his players. And he's there for him, and he's there to be a football coach. And even if that is more true than not, it seems like the best coaches in this situation, and I've heard about conversations that have happened on multiple campuses, it seems like the best coaches say to their players, hey, I really I'm interested by the stuff you put out. I just want to let you know I have your back, and anything that I can do to clarify anything, to be there for you, send me a text, give me a call. Here's my number. Nick Rolovich saying, we may need you to clear out your locker. It probably could have been handled. It definitely could have been handled better. And it's, and I think it was Bomani Jones who said this, that Washington State's already a very difficult place to recruit to. It is not a traditional college and college football program that recruits top level talent. It is not near any big high school talent bases. And so for Nick Rolovich, without having coached a game, to give himself this, to self-inflict this sort of reputation about not having his players' backs and not being able to convey what he's trying to convey in a mature, leadery way, I don't know. I don't know what his long-term future looks like, because you got to convince parents on the road that you're there for your sons.
Say no more. It's bad luck.
And how many people knew? How many people knew his name before yesterday?
I know.
How many West Virginia fans, how many Miami fans, how many Texas Tech fans, how many Wisconsin fans knew Nick Rolovich's name before yesterday?
I know.
All right. They know his name. Okay.
Staying with the Pac-12, been a busy news cycle out west. They approved on Friday a 10-game conference-only slate for football. We don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this one. We do have a bunch of questions that we want to get to, but 10-game schedule, conference only, beginning on September the 26th with, quote, a lot of built-in flexibility. Each team's going to play 5 home, 5 road games. The Pac-12 championship will be played at one of the home sites. It's not going to be played in Vegas.
The higher-ranked, yeah.
Yeah, the higher-ranked home team, either on December 18th or 19th. They worked out some sort of deal where they're going to start the Vegas game next year. And then games that can't be played on their scheduled dates are going to be made up in one of the bye weeks or in week 12, which is December the 12th. So, you know, whether they could pull it off or not is the operative question. And as we speak, as I think you said at the top, the Big 12 trying to work towards their own model, trying to get some agreement there. There's also a big NCAA Board of Governors meeting that's going to drop on Tuesday. So perhaps a lot of this stuff will be irrelevant by the time folks listen on Wednesday morning, but that is the state of play right now. The only other thing that I'll add here, this is just a follow-up to a story that we discussed on the last show about Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech, the prize defensive back, opting out, going to focus on the draft. Remember, lost a parent 2 years ago, didn't want to run that risk with another. He also adds that because of Virginia Tech's rudimentary and or non-existent health and safety protocols, that contributed to his decision as well. Quote, this year at Virginia Tech, at our workouts, I started having deep concerns about staying healthy. Guys are going home, going to Myrtle Beach, coming back up to campus. We weren't getting tested. We're all together working out close to each other. One day I looked around, we were like 100 deep in our indoor facility, no masks. My concern grew more and more.
Yeah, and I don't fault players. I mean, I don't fault Caleb Farley. I don't even fault players for being in a large group without masks. I mean, yes, they're at fault, but it's the responsibility of the grownups in the room to be very clear about protocol, to be very clear, like, if we're not wearing masks, we're not working out. If we're not working out, we're not playing. It's very strange to me. I think I just came into this with the assumption that, like, oh, all of these major college football programs have the means to convey protocol. That anytime you're inside, you're wearing a mask. Anytime you're practicing, this is what we're doing. Anytime, you know, this is how we clean up after practice, is how we're dealing with footballs and goalposts or whatever. I guess we're not really touching goalposts all that much. But for a place like Virginia Tech, if this is true, which I have no reason to believe it isn't, kind of shocking.
No.
Right. I can understand a tiny school really having trouble keeping up with whether it's a money thing, whether it's a supply thing, a testing thing, whatever. Virginia Tech makes a lot of money. They're an ACC school. They've played in recent huge bowl games. And if they're not able to get their messaging to their players, I imagine they're not the only school. I hope they are, because that's extremely worrisome if they are, but or if they're not. But man, this is rough. I totally get where Caleb Farley's coming from.
We'll see if there are other players. We'll see which direction this all goes. But adding a little bit more insight to his decision. That's correct. All we have for now. There could be more news by the time this breaks. That is sort of the way it goes in the world of podcasting. We did get a bunch of questions. Would you like to get to those?
Yeah, let's get to those.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail.
On the Solid Verbal.
Generally speaking, Dan, about once a month, we like to pay homage. We like to pay homage to the people that write in. SolidVerbal@gmail.com, to us on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, Juno. I don't know. However you get the stuff to us, we do our best to read it.
Good.
We received a fantastic question here from Eric. He writes in via email and says, guys, I was wondering if you can help settle a bet. Something we've done in the past, Dan. Don't see any reason we can't do it here. In 2016, a friend and I made a little wager. Basically, will Notre Dame join a football conference before 2026? We were no more specific. That's more or less the exact wording. We obviously did not anticipate this situation. So, should Notre Dame, quote unquote, joining the ACC for this season count? That is from Eric, Dan. How do you feel about this bet? Would you count it?
I don't know the language that they used. If it's simply, will Notre Dame football join a conference before 2026? Notre Dame has joined the ACC before 2026. If the wording of the bet is not, will Notre Dame become a full-time member of a conference? Might be different. That's semantics.
Right.
But the fact is, Notre Dame is playing an ACC schedule, is eligible for the ACC championship game. And how many non-ACC opponents is Notre Dame going to play this year?
Maybe one if things go well.
I think probably zero, maybe one, which is no different than any other ACC team. So I think Notre Dame's an ACC team.
I think Notre Dame's an ACC team. If there is
no, didn't say full-time membership, yeah.
If there is no legally binding contract containing specific language, if you're being very vague and broad,
right,
Eric, I think you got to pay out the bet. I don't know which side of this bet you took, mind you,
right,
but I think it counts. I think it has to count, right?
Oh yeah. Do you think it, we got a question on Instagram, do you think it's, you know, more likely that Notre Dame and other independent schools, Army, BYU are big notable ones, you know, is Army going to join the American if they ask them to? Is BYU going to join the Big 12? Are they going to go back to the Mountain West if they're asked to? Do you think this unique earth situation makes it such that that could happen?
I don't know what the output is. I don't know. I could certainly make a case for it. Here's what I do think. I do think that the sport is fundamentally going to be changed moving forward.
Yeah.
In many ways that we probably can't predict, but Notre Dame getting this exposure, hopping into the ACC, if only out of necessity for one football season, one shortened football season, there will be some output from that experience that they will find valuable. The whole thing still may not outweigh.
God, you're such an IT guy. There's going to be output.
Well, there will be. There will be something that comes.
There'll be I was thinking outcomes, but yeah.
And outcomes, sure.
Outputs and outcomes, yeah.
There will be something that comes from this that I wholeheartedly expect they will be very happy about. Will it be enough to sway them from independence, a culture that has permeated Notre Dame for decades? You know, probably not in the short term. I think what I do think, though,
I hate when I get permeated by culture tie.
Are you? Listen, if you're not making fun of the Globe tomatoes, you're making fun of the permeation.
It's the culture that has permeated Notre Dame for decades. Okay, sorry.
You scoundrel.
Okay. Okay.
Well, back to the serious topic of this, Dan, if I could for a second. I talked about how we're recording this on a Monday.
Yeah.
There's a Board of Governors meeting on Tuesday in the NCAA. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it relates to Notre Dame or BYU or Army, but if the Board of Governors decides that they're going to cancel the fall championships, but the Power Five somehow finds some way to weasel a season out of the 2020 calendar year, that to me would be the first like major, major schism between the Power Five, the NCAA, and it could signify maybe cracks in the foundation maybe point a little bit more towards that break with one from the other that we talked about with Richard Johnson. Like, could the Power Five decide that it's sort of quasi going to break away from the NCAA and run football on its own?
Yeah, it already sort of does. The NCAA is just there for enforcement and eligibility stuff. But in terms of a postseason, in terms of TV deals and exposure and the conferences aligning to sort of govern everything else, they already kind of had. And I saw people talking about this. The NCAA answers to its member schools. So anything new that Power Five schools would form would be an entity that answers to Power Five schools, which is not all that different from the NCAA, just has a shiny new polish. And the way that the college football playoff is run by who, Ty? BCS people? It is indeed.
Bill
it
Hancock.
Is indeed.
Bill Hancock.
Right. Yeah. So, yes, I could see, in regard to this Instagram question, I could see these schools becoming parts of conferences, but only because I think a lot's going to change with the sport in the next year or two because of whatever it is, Pac-12 players, whatever it is, players becoming more vocal and revenues becoming more obviously in need of a little bit more redistribution. I think things are going to change. Now, Notre Dame has the cachet to go about things independently because they are that quote unquote national brand. I'm not doubting it. I just like quoting national brand. And they can negotiate a TV deal on their own. I don't think there's a national TV deal available for BYU and Army in the same way on network TV that there is for Notre Dame. But I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting because we're going to see at some point, whenever it is TV contracts come up in various conferences, I think gradual reorganization around the reality that college football has in a lot of ways outgrown college.
Yeah. And look no further than our current situation to really highlight the weakness in the system. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Jason writes in, if the college football season does not happen at all this year, which teams benefit the most? Which suffer the most? Consider players incoming, outgoing, lost momentum, coaches aging, coaches getting another year when maybe they don't deserve it, et cetera, et cetera. Show your work.
I like the end of that.
This is a Clay Helton question, right?
Yes.
This is the Clay. So, this is how Clay Helton stays at USC until 2025.
What is your answer? Obviously, Clay Helton is a short-term winner. He doesn't have to play Alabama. He's given more time to sort of get the USC program in order from a coaching and personnel and general infrastructure standpoint. And coaches like Clay Helton, who, you know, have been hanging on, whoever that coach is, whoever, you know, a coach maybe coming off of an uncharacteristic bad 2019, that's going to go farther and farther into the rearview mirror. You know, like a Dino Babers at Syracuse, somebody who followed up a pretty exciting year with a disappointing one in a not all that challenging conference. That, you know, Pat Fitzgerald, probably a big winner. You know, even though Northwestern isn't a huge, huge national name, Northwestern had a pretty terrible year. David Shaw, pretty big winner. We're not, you know, thinking about Stanford's disappointing 2019 as much. So from an optics standpoint, teams like that, from a coach's aging further, I don't know if there's an obvious answer there. I mean, there's no reason to think Nick Saban's retiring because of age at this point. There's, you know, Alabama's still getting it done. Momentum-wise, Maybe. I think schools that have a lot of obvious first round, second round picks who are either not going to play because the season isn't happening or opt out because they don't want to take that chance.
Right.
You know, Ohio State, Clemson, Oregon, schools like that, that I think have a lot of, like, you know, at least have a couple. Yeah.
If there is no season and, you know, I don't know what that means for players like Ian Book or in Ian Book's type of situation, it puts schools like Notre Dame in a bind where you've got maybe that returning quarterback and who knows what the eligibility thing is. Maybe he wants to take a run at the NFL for some. I mean, who knows?
You have to if you're Ian Book. Yeah, of course.
It strikes me as, but you're really coming at me today. You're just...
The snark is my presence permeating your takes?
The snarkiness is permeating the show.
Sorry.
I feel for the group of five schools. I think they're the big losers.
Certainly.
If you're not in the Power Five, it's going to put you in a bit of a state of financial ruin. That's the obvious answer to me.
Schools who have recruited really, really well recently and can absorb the loss of newly eligible to the NFL for the NFL draft players, your traditional powers, you know, maybe perhaps coaches in year two who have put together their first real recruiting cycle. And so they have their players in the system and have more time to get to know their players and, you know, strengths and weaknesses if there's able to be practiced in some way. I also think big losers are new coaches.
Oh,
because
sure.
New coaches are desperate to see what they have with their players and to see what the new school is like and just to get out on the field and make sense of everything in either a year zero or a year one situation. Those are, you know, Mike Norvell at Florida State.
I was going to say, yeah. Lego
Sam
Batman,
Pittman
Dave
at Arkansas.
Aranda.
Yeah, all these guys. Those are big losers who are, and it's champing at the bit, I learned, but you can also say chomping at the bit, to just know what they have, know what it's like to be a head coach for these guys. Those are some pretty big losers there.
This is a fun question.
Yeah.
It's from Dan, and then beneath Dan is one from Dave. So we've got Dan and Dave coming back to back here.
Shout out Reebok. Shout out. Is it Dan Klobuchar, right?
I don't
Long-time
know. It just says Dan.
It is. I'm telling you it is.
If there is spring football, how will we designate the 2021 spring and fall seasons? 21A and 21B? 2021 and 2021-2, judgment season? 21, a new hope, and 21, the season strikes back? 2021, excellent adventure, and 2021, bogus journey? This is a fantastic question.
Yeah. It's just going to be spring 21, fall 21. It's just going to be a semester type thing, I would imagine. So I would say 2021, spring semester, fall semester.
But let's get creative with this, Dan. You know, like, we've done the ACC Fatlantic.
Mm-hmm.
We've come up with great names like Duke of Hazard, Alan Lazard.
Right.
This is a creative outfit here.
Spring forward, fall back.
I was thinking something like that. You got to incorporate the spring and the fall.
Yeah, I think daylight savings is a sham. We've all watched Veep. We know.
Sure.
Okay, so you're talking spring and fall seasons and how we go about, I mean, spring break. What is a good idiom with fall? By the way, if we have a season in the spring.
There's a fall break too.
Yeah, there is a fall break. But if we have a season in the spring and it ends after 6 weeks, that's a spring break, B-R-A-K-E, because puns tie.
Right.
I'll give it some more thought. You can let us know how. It's weird. It's hard to imagine they'd have a full spring and a full fall season. It's hard to imagine they would say, "Yeah, we're going to need you to play some teams, I don't know, 28 games, 29 games in 20." That's a lot to ask. That's a lot to ask guys to just take a summer off and not have a full off season, and what that does to recruiting and official visits and signing classes. I don't know. I think it's, if anything is going to happen, I think it'll be an attempted fall season. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. And then they're going to try again in August of next year. If they really feel good about like a bangers only 5-game schedule in April, May, I can understand having 5 and then a full season in the fall. Beyond that, it's too far to ask. Then you're going to see a lot more Pac-12 Players United, ACC Players United, Mountain West Players United. All that's going to start up to really come into play. I mean, we saw what happened when, the NFL tried to add one more game and what the players union pushed back on. So, and I understand why they didn't want it. Or two more games, whatever. I think it's going to get pretty dicey.
All right. So we don't have
I'll think on names,
here.
Ty. All
we got to think on this. We'll put this out there. Maybe
next
on
question.
Social media. That'd be a good one. Dave, staying with the subject of playing games in the spring. Could we get a non-traditional champion?
Mm-hmm.
If they even have a playoff or BCS style champion? This is an interesting question to me, Dan. You know, it's not likely. It's the same teams playing most of the same teams, right? They're just confining it a little bit more to conference. But I'll harken back to something I said on the last show. Without the non-conference games, typically you would use those just to get a check on where teams are relative to one another. It's much tougher to compare conferences if you don't have the non-conference games. So without that, in lieu of that, again, it is Barry Alvarez or people like Barry Alvarez in a room arguing about it. And that to me seems like a great recipe for some weird stuff to happen. Now, it is going to be tough to leave the big guns out, the Clemsons and the Ohio States and certainly the Oklahomas, right? But it stands to reason. I think if it were going to happen at all, and if we were going to have a weird, like, oddball team that works their way into the playoff, this would sort of be the year that it would happen, because everything that we'll have to go on will be much more of a limited sample size.
What if, hear me out, what if we, in the way that there are different cups, right, in European soccer, there are different tournaments, and even though you didn't win Champions League, you won Euro or FA or whatever.
Yep.
Right. So what if any way that we've ever determined a national champion is brought back, and especially if there's no college football playoff and the season just ends after conference championship games, and we have 3 10-0 teams and 2 9-1 teams, and then in the G5 level, we've got a couple undefeated teams, and it's like, wow, I mean, this the American was really tough this year. This, you know, Houston has to be given consideration. ECU has to be given consideration, whatever. I think we have a BCS champion. I think we don't have a college. Yeah, let's call it a college football playoff national champion. That's just determined by the playoff committee. There's no actual playoff. It's just a playoff committee champion. There is a college coalition champ, so whoever would have won the Orange Bowl or something that year. There is every single way that, you know, there's an AP champion, there's a coach's champion, every single way. Everything has to be fully transparent, and we just have like 7 national champions.
7 national champions, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Why not? I mean, it's such a weird, like, to just say, okay, Alabama or Georgia or Ohio State went undefeated and they had the best margin of victory, and it was clear that, you know, they were a class above in a way that no other team was a class above. They're the national champion. That's boring, Ty. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. So I'd like it to be sort of more up in the air. I think that's the way to go, because it's such an up in the air season. You might as well make the national champion weird.
Patrick, who are your top 5 running backs going into the 2020 season? Good question.
I did some research for this, Ty.
So did I. Travis Etienne is
definitely
my alpha. A close second is Chuba Hubbard. After that, I have a little bit more trouble. After that, I start looking at guys like Kennedy Brooks. I start looking at your boy, CJ Verdell. My boy, Journey Brown.
That's a name I wrote down.
Yeah, Kylan Hill.
I have Najee Harris.
Jadeon Hawkins from Louisville. Yeah. He's pretty good.
I have Najee Harris. I have Keontae Ingram. Performed well against good teams. Jerrion Ealy, Ole Miss. Now, certainly wasn't a workhorse last year, but the best of Jerrion Ealy was really strong.
Yeah.
It's a good, I mean, I don't like putting freshmen on this level yet. We'll see what happens at Georgia with Zamir White, who's finally hopefully healthy. Man, this'll be, I feel like I'm generally more excited about a returning. CJ Verdell was good and had some really nice long runs, but also some more inconsistent play earlier on in the season. Mostly, I think Stanford and Auburn were not great. But yeah, I don't feel like I'm as excited about the running back class going into the season as I normally am. I don't know. Maybe I'm forgetting a lot of guys. We'll see Trey Sermon at Ohio State.
Yep.
Zach Charbonnet.
I am not that excited about the quarterback class, to be honest with you.
I'm okay with the quarterback class.
We got Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence. They're the two.
It all starts
top.
With Chase Garbers for you.
Sure. But then after Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, who's like your third best quarterback in college football?
Oh, McHale, obviously. What are you talking about? That's a question?
Who's your third best quarterback? McHale Cunningham? That's your answer?
It might be.
I like McHale Cunningham. Excuse me, McHale.
He's nothing
Cunningham.
But really good. No, I think it's a fascinating year. So, okay, here's why it's fascinating. So we've seen a lot of very, very good Sam Ehlinger and seen some unfortunate Sam Ehlinger, but we know him. We're familiar with him. We know what the Sam Ehlinger experience is about, and I'm happy to have another year with it. Maybe not all Texas fans are with some of his not as fun games.
I think he's underrated, personally.
Spencer Rattler is exciting to me because he should. We've seen Oklahoma track record. He should have a good year.
Okay. Hold on, Mr. Permeation. Wait a second.
Okay.
The question was about top five running backs.
Yeah.
And I shifted it to like top whatever quarterbacks. You're not going to put Spencer Rattler in that
discussion. No, I'm saying I'm more excited about the quarterbacks in the 2020 season. I'm not saying these are my top five, but I'm saying as a general rule,
okay,
the running backs that we know about and potentially we're going to see step into a bigger role. There are some years where quarterback's not that interesting. I think with what's happening at big school. So you have Mac Jones and Bryce Young at Alabama. So a more veteran, steady hand, and then the promising freshman. We've seen that situation with Alabama before recently. Clemson's all set. Ohio State's all set. But Oregon, Joe Moorhead, Tyler Shuck, I think is interesting. Washington is wide open. Chase Garbers, I mean, everybody on the West Coast that talks about Pac-12 football will say, well, he's never lost a game that he played all of in 2019. Right. Keaton Slovis, I think, is probably worthy of top five quarterbacks in the country consideration.
I think so. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think across the sport, there's more intrigue than there is proven and reliable, but it's interesting to me.
And in normal years, when you've got that kind of uncertainty at the quarterback position, you get some wild results.
Yeah,
truly.
Absolutely. What's going to happen in Michigan? Wild results.
Yeah, I don't know. And so I sort of share your curiosity around the quarterback position. But in terms of like guys that we could really hang our hat on, outside of Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, maybe Sam Howell and Keaton Slovis, Sam Ehlinger, like outside of a very small select group, there really is a lot of uncertainty there.
Hat hanging is overrated. Wild cards, Ty.
Wild cards.
That's underrated.
All right. Give me some non-football. We got time for like three or four.
Wow. Okay. So this, I'm going to be selfish about this one, both because I think people are either in their homes and they're just really making the most of their time at home during this time, or perhaps there's some movement happening. You know, you're moving closer to family during this time or whatever. So Ty specifically, this is a question from Tyler, and it's probably for you. Tips for moving to a new house beyond hydrating and stretching, which are both very important, I would say. Maybe take Advil ahead of time before you move pieces of heavy furniture. Ty, I'm about to move into a rental house.
Yeah.
You recently purchased a house and moved in from not that far away. If you had to give everybody listening tips about what to do when moving into a new house, both the physical move and what you should do once you're already settled, what would they be?
As for the physical move, if you can afford to get movers.
Oh, yeah.
If you can afford to get movers, that's a pro tip right there.
Okay. I appreciate
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
We have
100%.
Movers.
100%. You do have movers.
We do.
Excellent. So that's a huge relief right there.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that I would say moving into a new house is get intimately familiar with some of the DIY YouTube tutorials.
Oh, good call.
I have learned more about amateur plumbing, odds and ends around the house, have really tried to stay away from the electrical, but most other stuff. YouTube has been a godsend.
What did you have to buy the most of? Because you moved in from like a townhouse situation to a full-on house, an FOH.
I did, yeah.
What were the big purchases early on?
Well, the big purchases is that we needed furniture.
Yeah, of course.
we didn't have enough furniture because we moved into a bigger place, and we had some empty rooms here. So trying to figure out what goes where and how some of our old stuff would fit in with the new place, that led to a lot of furniture purchases.
You a big armoire guy?
Me, huge armoire guy. You know that about me.
Everybody knows that about Ty.
Everybody knows that.
Permeation and armoires.
It's on my Twitter bio. Yeah. The furniture thing kind of caught me off guard. And I would say if you do the movers, do the movers. Otherwise, get familiar with the YouTube DIY section and, be prepared to try out some new stuff. Don't do anything crazy like try to fix your own garage door. I tried that and almost killed myself. Don't do that.
That sounds dumb.
Don't try that. There's a lot of tension there. Mm-hmm. Please don't try that. But as for things like amateur plumbing and, just play it by ear and don't overextend yourself if it looks too difficult.
Do you have like a checklist of when, especially because I am living in cold weather, which is like when valves need to be looked at, making sure water hasn't gone into a basement, making sure pipes don't freeze. Do you have a checklist? You're like, ooh, it's getting a little cold. I have to do like a once over of the old house-a-roo. Are you doing stuff like that?
Well, we have the heating and cooling guy who comes twice a year.
Okay.
And that's on a schedule as long as you pay your bill, right? So no big deal there. Most of the other stuff is sort of as you need it.
Okay.
And sometimes it's not always apparent when you need it. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think you learn as you get a house. But
I got to get a grill that ideally has a gas line hookup. Okay. I don't know if you have a recommendation, and I'm speaking to both you and anybody listening. I don't need a huge grill. It's just me and solid wife, Jody with an I. Sorry,
right.
Kate's solid wife. It's just me, Jody with an I, and the solid toddler. But don't need a huge one. Don't need a smoker. But it'd be nice to have a quality one that gets hot, can make all sorts of meats and vegetables on it. That'd be great. Got some patio furniture coming.
Yeah, we could talk. We could talk about this.
All right.
This is exciting.
Do I need a pellet grill, Ty? What do I need?
A pellet grill? Gotta get a gas grill, man.
Well, I guess if I'm getting a natural gas line grill, I don't need a pellet grill. But All right. I'll figure that out. So yeah, I'm going to pre-Advil. I think that's big. Advil, not a sponsor, but heavy usage. Next question.
James says, when you close your eyes and say the phrase college football Saturday.
Yeah.
College football Saturday. What do you visualize?
Right now in 2020? Is that how you're interpreting this?
I guess so.
More missed moments because of childcare, which is fine. Love the solid toddler, but that's different. And I suppose more room because I'll be in a house.
College football Saturday. When I close my eyes, I feel that crisp air.
Did you mount your TVs, by the way?
No, I didn't.
Have you ever mounted a TV?
I have, yeah. I could help you with that.
Did you do it so... I'm not worried about the actual process. I have a 65-inch TV. I don't know. It's probably weighs 40 pounds or so. Did you do it solo? Did you do it with the help of a friend? Did you hire somebody to do it for you?
No, I did it with the help of a friend.
Okay. That's my gut. Yeah.
Yeah. But you could do it with Jody with an eye. You just need to know a couple pro tips for how to get that thing mounted.
Okay. The brackets are already there. So that part's easy.
Well, then
easy.
You're fine.
Oh, okay.
Then you're fine.
Done.
All right, Dan. Where do we want to go next? Give me a question.
Well, you didn't technically answer the truffle oil or Cajun seasoning and tots or fries question.
I'll go tots or fries.
So which one? No, I'm not asking you if you'd rather eat truffle oil, Cajun seasoning solo, or tots and fries. Would you prefer a truffle oil on a tot or fry? A Cajun seasoning on a
tot or fry? I don't even know what
a
truffle oil is.
So you know what truffle oil is?
I have no idea. Cajun seasoning.
Truffles are similar to mushrooms.
I know that, but I've never had truffle oil.
I think you have. So you're saying Cajun seasoned what? Fries or tots?
I'll do tots.
Same. I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to another question. Oh, we actually have a bunch of good ones. You want to go to Brandon Kavanaugh?
Sure.
I'm gonna revise his question because I don't know enough college football players personally and about their personalities as much. Let's say a documentary is being put together about how college football players are training slash living their lives during the pandemic. Name five current players you'd like to see profiled in a documentary. I'm going to revise this, Ty.
Yeah.
If you could pick any one position to have a different player playing that position at five different schools profiled, what position on the football, you know, you want five quarterbacks? Do you want a documentary following around quarterbacks?
I feel like that's been done so many times.
I say definitely not.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks are too self-aware largely, and they're trying to just have good PR about them.
Give me wide receivers. Wide receivers, you get a pretty good spectrum. You'll get the short, like, jitterbug types like Rondale Moore, who can do everything. You'll get the big dogs. Like
yeah, but is he good documentary fodder? Is he funny washing
know.
The dishes? Is he funny hanging out with his friends playing Ultimate?
I don't know that about any of these guys. Do you?
All right.
You don't know any of these guys.
But wide receivers, I think there's a natural confidence to a lot of wide receivers.
Sure.
And you have to have a self-assured nature. You're going across the middle. So, yeah, I think that's right. I think my answer is probably going to be either offensive tackle or defensive tackle. Because those dudes, they're both valued because they play incredibly important positions. So there's going to be a certain degree of confidence and self-assuredness to them as well. But also they're navigating a world that they're not necessarily built to because they're huge. You know, college apartments aren't necessarily built for huge dudes. And so I think a lot of them have to develop a sense of humor about themselves. So I'm going to go with the large men here. A lot of eating. I think that's the way to go, Ty.
I'll go wide out. Give me Rondale Moore, Tylan Wallace, Rashad Bateman, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and Chris Olave.
Chris Olave.
I have no idea if that would be interesting, but thank you, Brandon.
No, I'm just going large dudes. Yeah.
Large dudes.
Mm-hmm.
Two more questions here from the non-college
I liked watching
football.
Marvin Wilson. I think Marvin Wilson would be on my list. He seemed
Marvin
great.
Marvin Wilson would be fun.
Yeah.
He'd be fun.
Any other question? Oh, this one I thought, it's a football question, but I thought it was fascinating, Ty. We can end with a football question. Surprise on-topic question from the Rexologist.
The Rexologist.
I don't know if you saw this. Via Twitter, I believe. On Sports Wars, shout out Sports Wars, available via Wondery, you spoke about how one of Oklahoma's biggest moments in the Texas-Oklahoma rivalry was when they started getting recruits from Texas. For other cross-state rivalries, what does a more, quote, program foundation event look like? And this person says the bias would be Minnesota-Wisconsin, but any is good. So what to you, just in general, what to you has swung, shifted program success level? What are those big moments that, you know, Oklahoma recruiting Texas players and right. building inroads in Texas is going to be huge. What to you, and you don't need to be specific, but what sorts of events permeate successfully growing programs?
Non-conference matchups, something that we will likely be without this year. That exposure.
But do you think like one, yeah, I guess in the case of Boise State, that's true. That they raise their profile to such a crazy degree with, you know, Georgia and Virginia Tech and Oregon.
I think non-conference matchups can play a part. I certainly think the postseason can play a part as well. Even though those games maybe don't mean as much if you're not in the playoff or one of the big bowl games. But, you know, you're really ultimately talking about exposure. What can get you exposure? What can put you on the map? And if you take down a giant, I think that's a seminal moment. That's an important thing. So I would throw that in there as well. I would also add, you know, I know it's probably not totally applicable for a school like an LSU or an Oregon because they are already among the most prominent college football programs. But if you can get like a sweet news hit about facilities or uniforms or just something that's novel and new and potentially very interesting to incoming recruits. I think that's interesting. That's a moment.
Yeah.
That's a PR hit as opposed to like something that's earth shattering, but it's a tiny little moments like that can eventually add up and make your program, I think, more appealing to some of those top level recruits.
Yeah, I think all those are right. I think systems become really important in terms of defining programs and raising profiles. We saw what happened with, you know, Florida under Steve Spurrier, or, you know, the military academies running the option. And, you know, it establishes a reputation. It establishes an identity. If I'm going to use an Oregon example, it's having a miracle season, the way that Oregon did in 1994, where they go to the Rose Bowl. They eventually get spanked by Penn State. But that raised Oregon's profile, and it got the attention of Phil Knight. Built them an indoor practice facility after Mike Bellotti was like, okay, what can we do? And then Nike became more involved with Oregon, and obviously the branding of the uniforms and the flashy style and the coaching hires, that becomes big. I think continuity with coaches, you know, we still associate Kansas State with Bill Snyder, right? Because he's recruiting junior college players. They're beating teams with more resources, and it's just scrappy little Manhattan, Kansas, Kansas State, you know, beating Giants, beating Oklahoma, beating Texas. And it's the continuity of a Bill Snyder program. We saw it with, you know, Bobby Bowden at Florida State and Joe Paterno at Penn State, where it's just like, okay, the identity is tied to these coaches, and you know what you're getting when you watch a Penn State team from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, or a Florida State team in the 90s. I think conference membership becomes a pretty huge change for teams. You know, what you know, Utah was considered to be, and TCU was considered to be, and West Virginia, and, you know, this movement around conferences, I think, is a pretty huge deal in terms of perception and identity, and success in general. And so force of personality among coaches, I think, is big. You know, Minnesota, I think, was in need probably of a reboot, and PJ Fleck has done a, so far, really interesting, fascinating, successful job in Minneapolis. So I think there are a lot of it goes to coaches, but having those magical seasons. I think if you think about Northwestern football and what they did in the mid-90s, really has still to this day set the tone of Northwestern as like a scrappy, winning, well put together program. I think it's, you know, a lot is tied back to coaches, but no. When you have those singular events, like you talked about, that big win, that big moment, that, you know, we're still talking about Boise State in 2007. We're still talking about, you know, the giant killers and the trick plays of Boise State. Those become seminal, foundational moments that define a program sort of almost in perpetuity. Yeah.
Well, the Statue of Liberty play. I mean, then we went back. We talked about that game, right? And it was ultimately a big old exhibition game. But Boise had been building to that moment for years. And look, it was a great game. If it weren't such a great game, maybe we're not talking about it. Maybe it doesn't have that kind of outsized impact all these years later. But fun game to watch, and it definitely helped put Boise on the map. Final question here. I got one more question.
Yeah.
This is from Cody. Next year, my wife and I will celebrate 10 years of marriage. In the early days, we hashed out a contract that allowed each person full control of what's on the TV during a certain part of the season. Obviously, I negotiated for college football season. This was a loose agreement early on, but became more formalized as the years have passed. It includes addendums for bowl season if my team reaches the playoffs, and the off season, things like the draft, National Signing Day, etc. During the season, I'm able to watch whatever games I want, knowing that in the off season I get no say, with lots of reality TV during her time.
I've learned about this, Ty. Continue.
With the season starting later and still possibly on the brink of being canceled altogether, what suggestions do you have for what I should do/watch during my time? Should I ask for an addendum because of the pandemic? And if so, what would that be? Any other thoughts or suggestions? Cody, this is a hell of a question, sir. First off, congratulations on 10 years or
upcoming
anniversary.
I want marriage suggestions from the man who said, maybe be passive aggressive about the dog sleeping in your bed as your big power tip, much to our friend Andy Wall's horror.
Again, the snarkiness permeates that side of the conversation.
It's the new Chicago.
Would you like? Would you like to tell me all the answers here, or do I get a say?
No,
go ahead.
I'm,
no,
I'm
go
deferring
tell
to
us
you first.
What you know, okay. Wise sir. Let's hear what you got.
Okay, so if you're claiming Saturdays during the college football season, you're claiming 15 Saturdays you know, perhaps you're only really watching TV at night and on weekends. That's my assumption. Not a lot of people spend all day watching TV on a random Thursday. So if the full season is canceled, I say you just keep those Saturdays to watch what you want to watch. And if you can't think of anything that fills out your complete fall run of Saturdays, just take some IOUs. Just say, you know what? I'm going to take half of these for shows I want to watch, and then I'm going to take half of these, or I'm going to take a quarter of these for shows I want to watch, and then I'm going to pull these forward to the spring. I'm going to defer. And, you know, I'm not going to make the decision at opening kickoff. I'm going to defer till the spring. I think that's an option you have. I would say do a lot of research about shows that you've heard are good. Maybe you watch the pilots yourself. Right. You're like, I've always heard Fargo is good. I've always heard The Wire is good. I've always heard, you know, Breaking Bad is good. Insecure, whatever. Always heard these shows are great. What about watching all of or some of the pilot? It's like, you know what? I'm not going to waste my pick on this show because it turns out I'm not into it at all. And so that's the way you go. You got to do your own scouting is what I'm saying. You got a pilot scout.
Pilot scout. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure you have shows, Ty. Do you have a show right now that you're like, I'd really like to watch that, but I'm not sure about the old Kate taste?
She's not into Billions. I've gotten into Billions. Okay. She's not into Billions.
Succession?
I haven't gotten into Succession yet. No.
Do you think she would like Succession?
I don't know anything about Succession.
Really?
Nothing about it.
Ooh, Ty. No. Boar's on the floor. Ty, you need to watch Succession. Even if it's, does she go to bed earlier than you do?
Sometimes, not all the time.
Take a late tie night and watch the pilot of Succession. There's only two seasons. I think there's only 10 episodes in each season.
I would tell this gentleman here.
We're on the floor.
I would tell this gentleman here that if you can defer to springtime, you know, provided there is no season, that's got to be your first move. And
yeah,
I say that with the recognition of the fact that it could overlap some of the reality TV stuff. Like, I don't know what the state of production is in the reality TV universe, but my guess is it's not doing great at the moment. So,
well, I think there's a backlog problem.
Whether it's a back, I don't know what the deal is there, but my only point is that you could have some overlap and that could make things interesting if you push it off to the spring. I would probably just go on like Netflix right now and just find stuff that you're both into and just stick with that.
That's the problem though. That's the tough part.
Yeah.
Like, I want to watch an episode about Oaxacan street food, of some food show on Netflix. And Jody with an I wants to watch Lenox Hill and people like die of brain surgery and the emotions that go along with that. That's not how I want to spend my time.
Right.
But I do it sometimes. And what was the last show? I won't tell her, Ty. What was the last show that you watched that you weren't into, but you watched it because you're part of a partnership?
I mean, that's most of the shows, Dan. I'm not going to lie.
Just give me the shows. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not saying anything.
You can't say it that loud. It's most of the shows.
Okay. Which one was truly pulling teeth?
I forget the name of this movie, Dan, but it was about like a weird cult in Norway and they were cannibals. And Kate was like, oh, I heard this is really good. I was like, something summer. I forget. S-O-M-M-E-R. Okay. Very strange movie. Not for me. She thought it was terrific. I was like, I don't know about this.
What I think is going to happen, by the way, is I think a lot of shows that were too bad to get picked up and purchased, and they're just sitting on a shelf somewhere, Netflix is like, floor is lava? Okay. Yeah,
Midsummer.
We need something.
Midsummer.
Midsommar.
S-O-M-M-A-R. Excuse me.
Okay.
Weird flick.
Mine was probably Lenox Hill.
Weird flick.
Just didn't want to watch. Yeah.
All right. Well, good question to go out on. We appreciate everyone asking these questions, writing in at solidverbal@gmail.com, hitting us up on social media. Again, going out to the website, solidverbal.com. Sign up for our newsletter now. We'll send you all of our updates in due time. Also, we've got a subreddit at solidverbal.reddit.com. If you like the show, please go on out to your podcasting app of choice. Give us a 5-star review. We promise that kind of stuff helps. We would greatly appreciate
it.
And that's all I got, Dan.
That's all. I think that's all I have. Solidverbal.com/store is the move for the new very soft, very stylish t-shirt. And I guess we should take this time to announce that we are adding Danny Cannell as a third host. Is that, were we allowed to do that yet?
I know. You got to, okay. Next time I have to build up to that with a drum roll.
Oh, sorry about that.
A little bit out of sync here.
All right. Welcome to everybody who is listening to the Solid Verbal.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt, we will be back on Friday. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.